The next talk is part of our web development track and will be held by François, and he will talk about Mozilla's persona identification system. I hope that's more or less correct. And maybe answer the questions why passwords are bad. Have fun.
Thank you. Is this mic working? Yes? Okay, excellent. So yes, I'm here to talk about passwords. Now, passwords have many problems. The first one is that if you have passwords on your site, passwords are really hard to secure. I don't know if you've been following the news recently, but there's been a number of compromises, a number of companies that have apologized publicly after losing their passwords to hackers. Now, I could pick on any one of them and make fun of them for not following best practices or whatever. But the reality is that doing this stuff is really hard. Because if you're storing passwords in your database, there's a whole lot of things that you have to do. You have to hash your passwords using a secure hash algorithm. You have to use per user salt values, different one for each user. You have to have a site secret that's outside of the database, so that if someone steals your database, they don't have everything they need to crack all of your passwords. Then you have to have password and lockout policies, because for example, if someone can brute force your passwords directly on your website, then you know you're only going to block that through a lockout policy. And finally, if your recovery mechanism, the thing that users have to do when they forget their passwords, because they will, if that's not as secure as the rest of the system, then the rest of the system may as well not exist, because that's the thing that attackers will target. But what's the biggest problem with this list, though? You know, it's a lot of stuff to do. Biggest problem is that these are the 2013 guidelines. I can guarantee you that in 5 years, there's going to be even more stuff that you have to do to secure your passwords in your database, because it's an arms race between you, the site owner, and the attackers trying to get at your passwords. It's not a good position to be in, because passwords are really a liability for you if you have them in your database. Now, it would be really nice to just be able to do this, right? I don't recommend you do this right now. But it would be really a good thing to aim for. Now, this is the second problem. Passwords are hard to remember. That's a real problem for users, right? It may not be a problem for you because you use a password manager, right? They're in every web browser out there, and there's products that will allow you to sync them between devices and across browsers. Now, how many people here use a password manager? Okay, about half of the crowd. It turns out that for the average web user out there, which we're not, nobody uses these. We're not quite sure exactly why it is that they're not using it, but they're not. Those products actually don't work, right? If they use a password manager, it's one of these. Those ones are really quite popular, but they're not exactly the password managers that security professionals recommend, right? Now, instead of using password managers, this is the strategy that users take. They just pick a really easy password. If you do that, then it's not such a problem. You know, you're less likely to forget, and it's a lot easier to remember. This is a top 500 passwords based on some of the biggest password leaks. You might find a couple of them that are easy to crack. yeah, all of them, pretty much. I mean, the fact that they're on this slide means that you should probably not use any one of these, right? But the other thing that users do, other than using a really easy password, is that they just use the same password everywhere. Because if you only have one password, it's much easier to remember. Now, of course, that has huge problems, right? If your one password gets cracked somewhere because one of the sites that you're using is insecure, then you're kind of screwed, because all of the sites that you've ever used that in are potentially compromised. So not very good. Now, the other thing about passwords being hard to remember is that users will forget them, which means that on your site, you need to have some recovery mechanism for when users forget their passwords. What does that usually look like? Usually, it looks like this, right? You type in your email address, you type in a username or whatever, and then the site will send you an email with a link that you click on, and then that confirms to the site that you're the owner of that email address, and so you're entitled to reset your password. Right? I'm sure all of you have seen this before, because I'm sure everyone has had to reset a password once in their lives. But what I wanted to point out from this, though, is that if you control someone's email account, you essentially control all of their accounts through this reset functionality. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, because if you have a very strong password on your email account, you're using, say, Gmail with two-factor authentication or something like this, then your email password is actually pretty strong, and it's not such a big deal that it allows other people to get into all of your other accounts. But I'm just pointing out that this is the current state of things today. Now, this is something that a lot of websites have started to use instead of passwords, because they found that passwords are a pain for users. So they've switched to using an account that users already have, like Twitter or Facebook. Now, what's the most obvious problem with this? Can anyone tell me? If I have Facebook account, yes. You need a Twitter or a Facebook account to get into your site, right? Very true. Now, if your site is useless without Facebook, like it's something that I don't know, that's connected to Facebook somehow, right? It's providing a service on Facebook, then that's not such a big deal. But for the average site out there, you will lose a bunch of users that either do not have a Facebook account or do not want one, right? And the same goes with Twitter. Now, the other thing, though, is that it goes further than this, because it turns out that there's approximately 15% of users that will refuse to log in to your site using their Facebook account, even though they have one. And that's because they don't want you, they don't know your site, they're logging in for the first time, and they don't want you to see all the stuff that they have put on Facebook, because they don't know exactly what Facebook tells the other site, but they've got an awful lot of stuff on Facebook, and they're scared. And there's about 15% of users that refuse to do this. So you're losing the people that don't have a Facebook account, and you're losing the people that find it kind of creepy. So you're losing quite a lot of people, actually. It's not, in some cases it might work, but in the vast majority of them, it's something to think about. The other thing, of course, is that do you really want to have this centralized authority controlling access to your website? Right? If someone somehow, if one of your users violates the terms and conditions of Facebook and they no longer have a Facebook account, then they can no longer log into your site, and they may lose access to the stuff that they've put onto your site. So that's something to think about. What about OpenID? OpenID has a really, really great property, and that is that OpenID is decentralized. A decentralized system means that you can choose who your identity provider is, you can choose who you trust, you can change identity providers, and you can also be your own identity provider if you don't trust anybody else and you happen to be technically competent enough to set one up. So that's a really good feature of OpenID. The downside of OpenID, one of the biggest ones, is this. This is what OpenID looks like. It's a URL. And URLs work for probably all of us here, because we know what they are. A lot of us have their own domain as well. But they don't work for the average user. It's really hard for the average user, it turns out. They don't associate that with themselves. So what did the sites do? The sites that were using OpenID for logins and found that this wasn't working. A lot of them said, oh well, I'll just do this. I'll just choose the most popular 13 or whatever OpenID providers, and that's all I'm going to offer to my users to avoid confusing them with a URL bar. But what are we missing here? We're missing the one property of OpenID that's so exciting, the decentralization aspect of it, right? You're no longer free to choose who you trust. You have to trust one of the people that were pre-selected by the site that you're trying to log into. So it's a big thing that we lost. But furthermore, this didn't work because there's far too many choices and it's confusing, so a lot of sites just said, oh well, screw it, I'll just offer a couple, no more than two or something like that. But this is the biggest reason why we Mozilla couldn't get behind OpenID. And it has to do with privacy. Now, the best way to understand it is to think of this analogy. Imagine that the next time you want to check into a hotel, when they ask you for a piece of ID to make sure that the name matches the one that's on the reservation, what would happen if they phoned up the government that issued that piece of ID to make sure that it's still valid? Well, the first thing is the government would have a trail of every hotel you've ever checked into, which is a little bit creepy. So it's not necessarily information you want a random government agency to have. Now, the other thing, though, is that that government agency would have the ability to deny you that hotel stay based on other information they have. For example, do you have a student loan that you haven't fully repaid yet? Oh, you do. You're trying to check into an expensive hotel. Well, no, you should pay your debts first, right? It's a bit of a stretch, right? But the problem is that this is exactly the kind of powers that you give to an OpenID identity provider. They can see everywhere you're going, and they can choose whether or not you go to these places. So all of this to say that the existing login systems are simply not good enough. I think we need something better for the web. What would the ideal web-wide identity system look like? Well, the first thing is that just like OpenID, it has to be decentralized. Users have to be in control of who they trust, because choosing your identity provider is a big thing. That entity can impersonate you on other websites. So you want to choose carefully. You want to be the person making that choice. The next thing is that it has to be extremely simple. If it's not simple for users, i.e. if it doesn't have a great user experience, then users will not use it. Or they will try to use it, they will fail, and then that will drive up the support costs for whatever site you're trying to sign into. So this is a really important point. But the other thing is that it has to be simple for developers too. Because if it's not simple for developers, there's no chance it will ever be secure. If you want to know more about this, just look at some papers on OpenID and SAML security. It's pretty scary. And for good reason, it's really complicated stuff. And finally, we're no longer living in a world where Internet Explorer has 93% market share, thank God. So it has to work on all of the browsers that people use and all of the devices that they use as well. Otherwise, it's kind of useless. What if this were a standard part of the web browser? Not something that's tacked on, that's added to the web. Something that comes standard with your web browser. Well, that's what we're trying to build with Persona. How does it work? Well, at the core of it, Persona is based on the idea of a verified email address. So if I can prove to you that I'm the owner of fbalier@gmail.com, then you can use that email address to create an account for me, tie that new account to that email address, and then next time someone comes in to your site and shows you a proof that they own this email address, then you can just let them into your site. Easy as that. So verified email addresses. Now, why did we pick email addresses? First thing is that email addresses are federated already through the domain that's part of it in DNS. So it's a good choice for this. Also, people know their email address, right? Most people know their email address anyways. A lot of them have it on their business cards, right? That's not the case with an arbitrary URL that you don't understand, as in the OpenID case. There's also natural association between a person and an email address, much like a person and a phone number. It's also easy to have separate identities. A lot of people have a work email and a home email, right? That's just two identities. But if you want another one, like you want to log into this site and you don't want to tie that to your real identity, you can just go ahead and create a new email. There's lots of free webmail providers. Like, most users know how to do this. And also, when was the last time that you created an account on a site and it didn't ask you for your email address? Right? Almost every site needs a way to contact their users. Finally, that's kind of an important point. We use email addresses so that there's no lock-in. If you adopt Persona on your site, and for whatever reason it's not working out for you and you want to move away from it, you can, because you have an email address for all of your users. So you can email them and tell them to set a new password on the next time they log in or something like this. It's not necessarily something you can do if you're using another authentication system where you don't have their email address. Now, the protocol behind Persona is called Browser ID. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to ask my two volunteers here, Guido and Danielle, to come and help me do a little demo of how it works. So Danielle here is going to be Gmail, I'm going to be the browser, and Guido is going to be the site I'm trying to log into, which is Wikipedia. So you can just stand over there, here, all right. So what I want to do is I want to log into Wikipedia using this email address. Now, I've prepared here a little tag that has that email address on it. I want to use this to sign into Wikipedia. But it's not very convincing by itself. What I need is I really need a signature from the authority for that domain. So the authority for the gmail.com domain, of course, is Gmail. So I'm going to go ask Gmail to sign this for me. Hello, Gmail. Would you mind signing this, please?
Can you give me your password first?
Oh, good point. I have to authenticate to prove I'm the real person.
Okay, that's correct. I will use my private key to sign this certificate. Have fun.
Thank you, Gmail. All right, so now I have a proof signed by Gmail that I'm the owner of that email address. Now, I can keep this in my browser and use it to log into a website. What I wanted to point out is that this is very similar to the way that we use these to do international travel. Right? When you want to travel to a non-EU country, what you have to do is a couple of weeks ahead of time, at least, you have to go to your local passport office and get a passport. When you enter that country, you present your passport and you gain entry to the country, hopefully. Now, those two things, those two steps, getting the credential and using the credential, they're separate. And it's very similar in the browser ID / persona world. So I've got my certificate here. Now, what I want is I want to use it to log into Wikipedia. But if I just use it in this form, then Wikipedia would be able to turn around and impersonate me on another website, right? Because they could just take this proof of ownership, show it to someone else, and gain entry. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to restrict that to just Wikipedia. And I'm going to do that using this envelope. We call this an assertion. So an assertion has two things. The first thing is it has an audience. The audience is essentially the URL of the website I'm trying to log into. So I'm going to write down wikipedia.org. There we go. Now the assertion is specific to this guy here. I'm also going to write an expiry. This is just to make sure that whatever happens in 2 minutes, this assertion will be invalid. All right, 2 minutes. So I'm going to put this inside the assertion. And there we go, I have a sealed assertion, which I'm going to use to log into Wikipedia. Hello, Wikipedia. Could I log in, please?
Hello. May I have your assertion, please? Uh-huh. Audience, Wikipedia.org, that's me. Expiry in 2 minutes, so it's still valid. So, let's see what's inside. Uh-huh, a certificate. fmarie@gmail.com. So I have to check Gmail. Hello, Gmail. I want your public key to check some stuff.
Okay, fine. Here you go.
Thanks.
Now, notice here that when Wikipedia walked over to Gmail, Guido didn't have to bring my certificate with him. So he didn't reveal to Gmail who was trying to log into Gmail. It was just grabbing a public key, which is the same for everyone.
Okay. So let's check. Aha, it's valid. So you're welcome to log in.
Thank you, Wikipedia. Thank you, Gmail, as well. So that's the browser ID protocol, the protocol behind Persona. Now, I want to show you what it looks like. Oh, yes, sorry, question. What prevents Wikipedia from still using the certificate that's inside it? That's because other sites out there will want an assertion, not a certificate. So that's not going to work. Yes. So normally what we say is that you should never exchange an assertion over HTTP. It should be over HTTPS. Yep. So is the assertion signed? Because if it's not, then someone could modify it and change the URL on it. Yes, it is signed. Yeah. It's hard to include as part of a paper demo. Yes, I forgot to repeat it for the first one. But yeah. OK, so let me show you what it looks like on the web. Now, so I'm going to log into this site here. Voost is kind of a social networking site for cyclists. It's got a lot of events for cyclists. So they use Persona and Facebook. So you can choose. Can you guess what percentage of people click on Persona versus Facebook? Sorry, what was that guess? Zero click on Persona and everybody clicks on Facebook? Sorry? 30%? 5% on Persona and for this website, yeah? 85 on Facebook or Persona? You're the closest person. 60% Persona, 40% Facebook. So I'm going to be part of the majority and pick Persona. Now I'm going to use an email address at the id.me domain. Now the reason why I'm using this domain is because it has native support for Persona, and that's what I want to show you. So I click Next. And now what you're going to see is I'm being bounced over to an id.me URL. And I'm presented with a form that asks me for my password. Now, this is just like when I tried to ask Gmail to sign my certificate, it asked for my password first. So same thing I have to do with id.me. And you'll notice that because this form is hosted on that domain, the mechanism that they use to authenticate me is entirely up to them. Could be using YubiKeys, could be using client SSL certificates, passwords, whatever. It's entirely up to them. In this case, it's just a demo one, and it's a very simple password. So. There we go, typing in my password, click sign in. So my password is accepted, the identity provider has signed my certificate, I'm generating this assertion to sign into Voost, and Voost has verified it, and if you see on the corner there, I'm logged in. So there we go, as simple as that. Now, the point of this demo was to show you that today, Persona is a decentralized system. If you have a native support at your identity provider level, the certificate signing, all of that stuff is handled by someone else than Mozilla. It's handled by the identity provider directly. But the thing is, decentralization is really important, but it's not a product adoption strategy. Meaning that if we just wait around for every domain out there to add support for Persona, we're going to be waiting for a really long time, right? We can't wait on this before we get started. So what we built to work around this bootstrapping problem is we built a temporary centralized fallback. So centralized, not decentralized, but temporary, meaning that as soon as a domain gets native support for Persona, all of this goes away. So let me show you what that looks like. Second site. There we go. Log into Slowblog, and I'm going to sign in. This one only uses Persona for logins. And this time, I'm going to type in, an address that doesn't have native support for Persona yet. There we go. Now, what's happening here is that it's using the fallback identity provider. The fallback identity provider requests a password. And now, it needs to check that I'm the rightful owner of that email address before it will sign certificates on behalf of that email domain. So it sent me an email. If I go here and click here, there we go. I got an email from Persona. Going to click on it. And that will confirm to Persona that I'm the owner of that email address. And then Persona will, from there on, agree to sign certificates on behalf of that email domain. So there you go. I'm signing to web.de. Yes, you have a question. So why the password? The password is there so that you don't have to click an email link every time you want to log into a website. Because otherwise, we would have to check every single time that you're the right person. But we ask you to confirm your email once in the fallback IDP. And then after that, you can just log in with that password that you have with us. But it is the same password for all of the sites. It's just a password for the fallback. And as soon as you get an email that has native support, then you don't need the password anymore. So it's a password for Persona. It's not a password for the site that you're trying to log into. That's correct. So the point of this was Persona works today with all email domains, either natively, as I've shown you with the id.me example, or through the fallback. But we can do something better. And that's the concept of identity bridging. So there's a lot of email providers out there that have some kind of authentication API. For example, Yahoo has an OpenID API to it. So what we've built is a bridge that talks OpenID to Yahoo and then talks browser ID back to the browser. Let me show you what that looks like. So this is a third Persona using site. I'm going to sign in here, and I'm going to type in a Yahoo address. All right. Now what's happening here is that the bridge is kicking in, and it's taking me to a Yahoo login page on the Yahoo domain. So this is the OpenID login page for Yahoo. And this here is my Yahoo password, which I'm sending to Yahoo only. And when I click sign in, then Yahoo will confirm to the bridge that I'm authenticated, I'm the real person, and then the bridge will send the assertion, will sign a certificate, and the browser will generate the assertion to log into this website. So for those users that have a Yahoo email, they today have the experience that I've just shown you, so the kind of near-native experience with Persona. We also have the same support for Gmail addresses. So those people don't have to use the fallback identity provider today. So for those of you that have noticed, I used three different browsers in my demos. That's to emphasize the fact that Persona works today on all modern browsers, both on desktop and also on mobile. So it's decentralized, simple, cross-browser. I've shown you how simple it is for users, but what about developers? What if you want to add Persona support to your site? What does that look like? Well, let's take the example of 123done.org, which is a demo site that we run for Persona. If you take a look at the source code for this website, there's just the HTML source code, you'll find that there's a script that's loaded. That's the first thing you have to do. Load this external script. Purpose of that script is to add Persona support to your browser if it doesn't have it natively. If it does, then the script basically does nothing. If it doesn't, then then it will add it to the browser. The next thing is you have to call the setup function, navigator.id.watch. So all of the navigator.id function, they all come from this script that we just loaded. You have to do three things in watch. First thing is you have to tell Persona who the currently logged in user is. So you pass in their email address like this, if the person is actually logged in. In this case, we're not logged in yet, so id.me, once it's redone, would send in null. Nobody's logged in. Then you have to define a callback or a function that gets invoked when it's time to log a user in. So I'm going to come back to this one. The other one is a logout function. So what needs to happen when you need to log a user out? In this case, all we need to do on that site is redirect to the logout page, and that will remove the session on the server and then remove the cookie as well. Okay, what happens when we click on that button up there at the top? Now, by the way, that button can be whatever you want it to be. It can be a text link. It's whatever you choose to be. You're free to use the button you want. But you need to call this function here, navigator.id.request. No parameters needed, but this is a function that triggers the dialog that you've seen before. In this dialog on the left, I've got two email addresses that I have certificates for. So I can pick either one of them. I'm going to pick the second one and then click the sign in button. That's when the login callback gets invoked. So the login callback is invoked, and what you get here is an assertion. It's the only parameters you get. If you're wondering what an assertion looks like, it's a pretty abstract thing. It looks like this. It's a big string of Base64 encoded stuff. And what you do with this is that you have to send it to your backend for verification, because you can't verify an assertion on the client, because any web user out there could tamper with their own the JavaScript that's being delivered to their browser. So you have to do that verification server side. So you send it to your server. Here I'm just using jQuery to do an AJAX request to my server. On the server, that's all you have to do. This is Python code, but it's similar in pretty much every language out there. One way to verify is to send it to this URL. So you can verify everything yourself. You can do a little dance like what we did with Guido and Daniel, where you grab other people's public key and so on. Or you can send it to an online verification that we run. The reason why we run this is that we don't want to force everybody else out there to have to write crypto code to be able to use Persona. We want it to be as easy as possible. If you don't want to use it, that's fine, but it's there for people that need it. So all you have to do if you're using the online verifier is you send to that URL the assertion that you got from the user, as well as the audience for your site, so the URL of your site. That's what you're going to get back from the verifier. You're going to get back a status of OK, if it's a valid assertion, if everything is fine. And then you're going to get the email address of the person that's trying to log in. So once you have that email address, that's all you need. You can log that person in. If you get an invalid assertion, then you'll get something like this. Status failed, and then the reason why it failed. Now notice here that you do not get the email address of the person trying to log in. That's to prevent you from accidentally logging in someone with an invalid assertion. So person is logged in, then the only other thing we need to do is hook that logout button to this function, navigator.id.logout. And that will, of course, trigger the function that you've already defined, and that will log the user out completely. So just to recap, you load this JavaScript library, you set up your login and logout callbacks inside the setup function, you hook your two buttons to the right functions, request and logout, and then finally you verify the assertion server side. And the best part is that you don't need permission to do this. There's no API key or anything like that needed for this. It's an open system. So you can add personal support to your site, your application, whatever you want, in just those four steps. Now, I want to leave you with one very simple request, and that is stop making the problem worse. Now, the password problem worse on the internet. Now, specifically what I mean by this is if you're building a new site, please default to Persona. I'm not saying you should always use Persona, because there are cases where you may want to use something else. But don't default to asking the user for yet another password. Start with Persona. If it doesn't work, that's fine. Pick something else. Pick Facebook, pick OpenID, whatever it is that fits your needs better. But don't start with a username and a password. If you're working on an existing site, then please consider adding support for Persona. It doesn't have to replace Facebook, Twitter, all these things. As you can see in the Voost example, it plays very well. It can work really well with Facebook next to it. But please add support for it. What you might want to get rid of, though, is you might want to get rid of any sort of manual fallback mechanism that you have on your site. Like if you allow people to sign in, create an account, a manual account using an email address and a password, then you can get rid of that and replace that with Persona. For example, when you register on Pinterest, they ask you whether you want to log in with Facebook or create an account with an email address. So what I'm suggesting is that they go from here to to here. Did you see the difference? Here to here. Difference is the click handler on that button here. Right? So you set this to use persona, and then you can get rid of this form. It's no longer necessary. And also you can get rid of your password column in your database. So thank you very much. Are there any questions? Yes. Sorry. So the question here is, our claim is that it's a decentralized system, and yet we're asking people to put in this, to load this script include.js from all of our sites, right? And also, if you're using the online verifier, you're sending quite a lot of information back to Mozilla. So so we can see all of that stuff, and it's not really decentralized. It's a very good observation. We're building a decentralized system, but you can't start fully decentralized from day one. It doesn't work. Like it's a bootstrapping problem, and so that's definitely our goal, to be fully decentralized. Right now we're not quite there yet, but we're working towards this. Now, in terms of the fully decentralized view, what we want is we want people to use to not use the verifier eventually, to use the libraries that will do the own local verification, so that piece goes away. The fallback identity provider goes away when the email provider is on board or the domain is on board and has native support. And the final piece, this include.js part, there's two things that need to happen here. The first one is browsers need to have native support for persona, in which case that stuff is no longer needed. And then the next thing is then site at some point. Right now it doesn't work yet because we haven't stabilized that part of the system yet, but we will recommend at some point that people host include.js themselves so that it's not getting it from our server. So that's for the decentralization aspect of it. We have a plan for everything to be decentralized. It's just a question. Right now the email address part can be fully decentralized. The other pieces will come in later. Then you asked about load for our servers. If everybody's pulling the file from this, the service is currently over-provisioned, so it's ready to take on more than it currently has, and we can easily add more servers. So we'll handle. I have no problems believing it. We'll handle the load just fine as people ramp up. That shouldn't be a problem. We'll add more servers when it becomes a problem. But the neat thing is, as more people sign up as well, then the load might reduce eventually when it becomes more decentralized. So, the question is there a way to host the include.js file yourself today? The answer is no, but also it would be useless because if you don't have native support in the browser, that's not the only file you need. You need to pull in a bunch of other files from our domain. So right now, you have to trust us. Once there's native support in Firefox, we'll still have to trust Mozilla at some point, right? You can see the code, but you can also see all the code for all of this, of course, is open source and it's on GitHub. So. Yep. So how complicated is it for email providers to work with this? For an organization, say a company that wants to add native support for persona, what they have to do is they have to expose a support document, first of all, at this URL. So this is the id.me one, but your domain slash well-known slash browser ID. The support document looks like this. It's got three things. First one is your public key. The second one is an authentication endpoint. This is the login page that Persona will display, the browser will display when it's time to log a user in. And then the other one is a provisioning endpoint. And that's basically the thing that the browser will use to ask you to sign a certificate. So that's not there's nothing visible on that page. It's just a little bit of JavaScript that takes the certificate signing request, signs it, returns it. So it works like this. The browser will check for the existence of that file. If it exists, then it's got native support. Then it will try the provisioning endpoint. It'll say, hey, sign the certificate. That will only work if the user is already logged in. If the user is not logged in, it will fail, in which case the browser will show the authentication page and then try again. And then this time it will work. So if you're a business and you want to do this, then you expose your support document, and then you just have to sign the requests as they come in. And we have a little server that does this for you that you can download called Browser ID Certifier. So it's a little bit of glue that you have to write, like you have to tie it to your login page, and maybe it's an LDAP server or whatever. If you're interested, we internally at Mozilla, we use one that connects to our LDAP server, and that does that. And the code is available for that as well. So what happens if the identity provider that Mozilla hosts, it gets compromised? Wouldn't that compromise the whole system? That's a general problem with identity providers. If your identity provider is compromised, then the attacker can log in as you, because your identity provider can always log in as you, right? If the fallback identity provider is compromised, the one that's running by Mozilla, then the domains that don't have native support will be compromised. But the verifier checks whether or not a domain is native, and native has priority over the fallback. So the fallback in this case, so if say there's a Mozilla, like Mozilla.com is a native, has native support, and ID.me has native support. If you gave me an assertion for an ID.me email address that was signed by the fallback identity provider that you've compromised, then I would reject that, because when I verify this, I would see that it's not signed by the right person. But yeah, we have to keep it really secure, because it's, any identity provider has to be secure, and so we're doing lots of proactive things for the fallback identity provider. Right, so the question is Persona PCI certified? It's not currently PCI certified. No, so if you're using it in a PCI environment, then you probably, I'm not an expert on PCI, but it sounds like you're not gonna be able to use it for that particular purpose. Okay, so there are a couple of questions. Let's see if I remember them all. The first one that I remember, anyways, was around it requires a pop-up, and that means it can be phished, that kind of stuff. That's correct. The only way, and you point out that that's a problem with OpenID, this phishing aspect, because it's done, it's a form that's done within the content frame of the web browser, then a phishing site could replicate that, perhaps at a different URL, but whatever, users don't look at URLs, and then users can be phished. That's correct. The only way to solve this is to have native support in the browser, which we're working on. So until we have native support, then you can write a phishing site, just like you can with Facebook, Twitter authentication, OpenID, everything else, basically. So yes, that's correct. Another point you made is that it requires JavaScript. It's also correct. The reason why we require JavaScript is that we want to leave the private key in the browser. If we didn't have JavaScript, we would have to do the sign-in and the generation of the assertion stuff on some kind of server, which means that you would not be able to hold on to your private key anymore. So we need a way to have client-side processing. So maybe we could use Flash or Java, but that's probably not as nice as JavaScript, to be honest. And I forget the other questions. But you mentioned also that it's currently centralized, and that's correct. There's pieces that are centralized, but as I said earlier, this is for the bootstrapping phase. We'd love other people to jump in and help us make it more decentralized. So where do you use public private key technology in the browser? During the demo, when I said that I generate this certificate is actually a public key, and I leave the private key in the browser, so that never leaves the browser, and then I get this public key signed by someone else. So when I generate an assertion, the assertion is signed with my private key that's in the browser, and then the site that received the assertion can check that the assertion is valid by looking at my public key. And make sure. Is it a temporary key or a permanent one? It's a temporary key pair. The public private key pair is only valid for, well, that depends on what the browser wants to do, basically. But it's valid for at most 24 hours, and it's regenerated. And then we send the public key again to be re-signed by the IDP and stuff like that. So there's no revocation needed and stuff like that because it's very short-lived keys, basically. Yep. Over there. Let me just answer that one first, and then I'll come back to you. So the question is, does Firefox have native support? Not currently. We're working on it. We started with the JavaScript implementation because we needed a system that works in all browsers. So we focused on that first, because otherwise it's useless, right? If I'm standing here trying to convince you to use something that only works in Firefox, like you're not going to be able to, even if you like Firefox and that's what you use, you can't do that on your site. You have to let Chrome users, IE users, and so on use your site as well. So we're working on it. We've started working on it. But it's not ready yet. Then the other thing was, what about other browsers? We want to make sure that we have it working in Firefox first, because we want to make sure that that the API, the protocol, everything works. And because if we ask, you know, the Chrome guys to take a look at it, and there's a few things that we need to fix on the way there, then that's not really it's not really convincing. So once that works in Firefox, then we'll definitely look at either getting the Chrome guys to the Chromium folks to add it, or we'll write an extension, or we'll write patches for it, or whatever. That's certainly something that we'd like to do. And what was your other question? So why would WebD support something like this, right? I think there's a couple of reasons. The first one is they would give the users a better user experience. Now, there's a lot of email providers out there. If you want to differentiate yourself from others, that's one way of doing it. If you have native support, then that means that you're taking all of that part of the flow back to Germany, right? It's no longer happening on US servers, And you know, that's so that might be a selling point. But also, you can make a much better user experience, because there's no need to go back to your email. You can have, you know, and or you can choose. There's also like companies, for example, that might choose that they don't want to use a password. They want to use like an RSA key or a YubiKey or something like this. They want something more secure. For the Mozilla IDP, we use passwords in LDAP, but we also generate really, really short certs. So the certs will be only valid for 5 minutes in a case of RDP, because we basically what we want is if an employee leaves, we want them to not be able to use anything with their Mozilla email address within 5 minutes of leaving. So that's a policy that other companies may choose to do. If you're using the fallback, then it's our default policy. So if you want to have control over this, you can do this. The other thing that might convince them is, once this system is adopted by more sites, then you know it will be very nice for, like, it will be a recognized thing, and then people, users might be asking for it. Right now, it's not really the case, because there's not that many sites that use it. But we're working to change that. So. So the comment was that there's companies that may choose to never support persona natively, you know, and that's kind of a problem. That's possible. I think that might change once the system is really widespread, because then, you know, they may be at some point in the future, they could be one of the few places that don't do it. And the other thing is, they don't have to do it themselves, though, because you can, it's something that I didn't show, but in your support document, you can actually delegate your authentication to someone else. So if you're a company, you could, there's a lot of companies that delegate their emails to Google Apps, right? They don't want to handle that part of the thing at all. They could also delegate authentication to someone else that would run it for them. And there's lots of companies that already do that for various other things. So I wouldn't rule out entirely, because if they want to do that, then all they have to do is to publish a 3-line JSON file that just says authority is other domain. So a company has no interest in supporting persona. I don't think that's true. I think companies might want to choose the security parameters for their domain. Like for in a case of Mozilla, for example, as the organization, we want to make sure that certs are really short-lived. We want to make sure that authentication is done on our servers. So you get more control when you do this. So, yeah, let's talk about it afterwards, because, let's talk about it afterwards. Yep. So the question is about client certificates. So SSL certificates that you use to, instead of proving to the client that the server is valid, you do it the other way around. You use it to show to all the servers that you're a specific person. And a great example of an organization that uses that is CA Cert. But the problem with SSL certs, other than the fact that the user interface is not very good, and especially in Firefox, actually, the problem is that with certs, you have to copy the cert into like all of the devices that you use. So then it becomes like kind of a key distribution problem across all of these things. And I don't think that this kind of thing will work as well as you know, the what we're trying to replace is passwords, and passwords are really convenient, right? That's why they're used so much everywhere. SSL certs work in, the client certs work inside organizations where typically that's kind of a feature of, it's difficult to move the cert around. And there's lots of companies that use it internally and it works really great. Persona, it takes a different approach. We're using client certs. They're not the same kind of certs that we usually have, but we do have